Sunday, January 31st, was our first time out to a public event since coming home from the hospital. We went to the Red Mass at St. Matthew's, a traditional service that began some 700 years ago or so in England, where prayers are for all the leaders of the government, and the priests all wear red vestments. It was very colorful and impressive. The first time I've heard the Mass, largely in English, but not all. Landon and I, Lucy, and were escorted to the front row. A great deal of the cabinet and court were there. How interesting to think of the progress which the ecumenical movement has made in this brief span of time. I looked over at Lucy, the only one of us who really knew what was going on, when to rise and kneel and why. And she was holding a rosary, a fact that I expect was not overlooked by our friends of the press. Being in St. Matthew's, and I think it's the first time we've been there since the funeral service for President Kennedy, I couldn't help remembering back the solemn ritual and pageantry of that day, all in Latin and incomprehensible to me. And then suddenly the presiding archbishop, close friend to the family, cried out in English, almost as though it were wrung from him in anguish, that one dramatic line, "O Jack, may the angels attend thee, may the saints watch over thee." Archbishop O'Boyle came down and greeted us when the service was over and escorted us out of the church. Back at the White House, Lyndon spent most of the day in bed. We had our lunch in bed on trays, and then he turned out the light. Such willingness to rest means he's not quite strong yet, not quite himself. Sometimes, though, for a man of his temperament, it means you have time to worry, and work is his antidote to worry. Surprisingly enough, it was I who really took a nap. And then when we woke up, we called Jack Brooks and the Bill Whites to come over and have early dinner with us. Jack brought us some venison sausage. The conversation got around to George Reedy and the bad time the press is giving him in his briefings. Lyndon said, "They think a press secretary is there for them to rape." It is true, if you read the briefings, you get the impression that he is something like a bull in an arena, and then when they smell blood, it makes them lunge in and stick him more. I must say, though, that a sense of perspective requires me to see that this is the easy time with the press. For us, there have only been pinpricks. We discussed Bobby Kennedy's relations with the press. Someone said he has the most instantaneously obedient portion of the press of anybody around town. A coterie that respond in that like a chorus, one after another, some variation on the same theme. Kraft, Bartlett, Evans, Mary McGrory, and she has the most talented pen in town. The conversation got around to Albert Thomas. He's been sick. Everyone knows it was cancer. He thought of not seeking re-election, and then he decided to do it, and it was a wise choice, I believe, because he's the sort of man who had better die working. He's a hard man on his opponents, and he does his homework superbly, as anybody who crosses swords with him will find out. Even being sick has not made him less formidable. Jack Brooks said about him with a mixture of affection and admiration, "He will be mean enough on his dying day to rise up and say no." It was an early to bed night, probably a good thing. It may be the last for some time, because looking at the calendar for next week, the tempo picks up. A visit into the children's room brought diametrically opposite feelings. Lucy had been in to see me, and I followed her back to her room, sensing that cool, withdrawn, I don't want to talk about it attitude that sometimes means with her there is something she ought to talk about, or really wants to talk about. And she did. Had failed his organic chemistry. That meant he would have to take a repeat next summer, which would cost him a lot. It would also cost him the opportunity of getting a job, saving money for his next year of school. A setback, the frightening possibility that he might not be up to medical school. Lucy was disheartened. She was in tears before she finished talking. She said, "Mother, it's so cold and lonely here." She kept on repeating that sentence. She said, "And I wish we had a place of our own." She's such a pathetic mixture of beautiful young woman and child. And everywhere I look around me, my friends' children, her contemporaries, are getting married, with years of school before them. On the other hand, Linda Bird, back from Philadelphia, greeted me rather airily with, "Mother, I'm going to the University of Texas next fall. I'll need to if I want to graduate from there. I doubt that I can make Phi Beta Kappa because I have too many B's. But I could tell in her tone that she was going to try hard. And then she said, and I'm going to Europe this summer. It'll be my last chance. It'll be the last time I'm free and have your money, she added. And I want to go. I've studied so much history, and I never have seen anything in Europe except 3 days in Italy. I want to go to England and France and Germany, and I'm going down to Spain to see Robin. I was quick to seal it with approval, promise her the money, to tell her I couldn't promise her that I'd go with her. I was so flattered that she wanted me to, but that I might just join her for a week or two along the way, because she hopes to make it a trip of a month or even 2 months.